morning, everyone. You've tuned in to Paradigm Shifters, and boy, what a paradigm shifter we have tonight. We have with us an expert of the Mayan calendar. I'm very clear that you also said you're not an expert of the Mayan culture, but the actual calendar and all that that entails. Welcome to the show, C.J. Kalaman, Carl Johan Kalaman. We're so delighted to have you here.
Oh, thank you very much. It's a great pleasure.
And when we, it's our great pleasure, actually. We've talked several times over the last few years, and each time talking about how, according to the calendar, and of course heading to 2012, different shifts of consciousness are huge, and there's less time between each shift, right?
Yes, it's what you might call a frequency increase that has been going on, actually, from the very beginning of the universe 16 billion years ago. It's sort of it goes in levels, where each level has a particular frequency of its own.
Mm-hmm.
And in general, then you might say, because of your programs named the Paradigm Shifters, the true paradigm shifters are actually the shifts in the Mayan calendar. And we are more, you and I, we more the little ants down here that are sort of responding to these paradigm shifts.
Well, hey, where do they come from? Where do the frequencies come from?
The traditional way the Maya used to explain it was that there is something they call the heart of the heavens. And it might have been known more popularly in recent decades as the Hunabku, which is symbolized like a yin-yang polarity. But the way the Maya would speak about it in their old inscriptions would be that something they called the world tree. And it's both misleading and well-leading, so to speak. What it is sort of the heart of the heavens, the center of the universe, that is organized pretty much like a cross or a coordinate system in three dimensions. And this is not a solid cross or solid tree of life, so to speak. We're talking about billions of light years in scope. But it's more like an etheric cross. And it is from that vibrations emanate. And these vibrations are creating certain waves. And the waves is what the Mayan calendar would describe. And the waves are what we are in resonance with. You might say we are some of the antennas of the waves. But this means
so the waves are actually moving through us as beings that can actually be a microcosm of these waves, would you say?
Yeah, exactly. Or you might also say that we are created in the image of this tree of life, because the tree of life then is it's also a living structure. It is what gives life to the universe. So if you look at these ancient pictures from the Maya, for instance, and the tree of life is not just Mayan, it was all over the world.
For sure.
Then you will see that there are often, it is what gives birth to human beings. There are heads coming out of it. There are fruits coming out of it. It's a creator of life. And we human beings, is on one level, we are made in the image of this. And what's so special about it is that it organizes the world in, especially in four directions. And it organizes us in four directions. And those directions is the front side, the back side, the left side, and the right side. And you might say the actual tree of life of a human being is sort of like some kind of a light structure that goes through our spinal cord, That's what we are organized around. Our whole
well, that world. Makes incredible sense, doesn't it?
It does, mm-hmm. Yeah. It's not at all so, you know, we take it for granted that we are sort of symmetrical beings and have these different directions of our beings, but when you think about it, you know, why is it that all higher organisms are organized in that way? Mm-hmm. Well, I would say it is just because we are created in the image of this tree of life.
Hmm. Well, I'm going to jump to a funny thing, which is, let me see now. We're talking about the ninth wave. I know to people who are listening, I'm making a jump here. But when we talk about this tree of life way out in the galaxy or in the center of our universe, is it changing? Is it creating? Is it coming to a ninth wave as well? Is there a source beyond that? Is this just waves kind of reverberating through the universe, would you say?
Well, that's it comes to a point then when I think you cannot answer it in terms of any kind of evident mm-hmm. material and so forth. Is there anything behind it, so to speak? Well, I think it's really, some people would probably say that God is the creator of the tree of life, and right. through the tree of life, the cosmic plan is executed throughout the universe. Hmm. But if you look at the ancient peoples of our planet, some of them would actually look upon the tree of life as the creator.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have the Jewish, Christian mythology in the book of Genesis, then this God is sort of separate from the tree of life.
Mm-hmm.
But they're both there in the Garden of Eden, in the sort of, which really is like the center of the universe, if you like. But here, it's manifestation here, you might say.
Well, it seems to me one of the things that's wonderful is that it's like the breath of life, the breath of consciousness is kind of undulating and waving into us, moving consciousness. And so it is kind of, it's got to be divinity at some level. Not that I'm trying to relate it to God. I'm just saying it's hugely impacting for our whole consciousness on our planet, isn't it?
I would say so. And it's sort of a matter of your taste, how you want to speak about it. What we're talking about, I think, is for certain what people in maybe 1,000 years ago or 2,000 years ago would give in religious language.
Mm-hmm.
And now we may use some other language for it, not so much like a personal God or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But the enigma is still there. The mystery is still there, because there is still the creator of the waves and how they're creating and how consciousness is creating that, and our relationship to that. It's the we may not all of us use religious language, but certainly these things were described in religious language.
And so maybe it's no accident that the word awesome is really big in our popular language these days.
Yes. Yes.
I want to throw this at you. So what's going on in the Middle East? Can we relate that to the ninth wave? Can we relate that to the shifting consciousness?
Oh, absolutely. So let me bring us back then to the tree of life,
mm-hmm.
Which is the creator of the winds of the universe, you might say, the creator of life of the universe. And now it exists on this huge cosmic level, and there is it's in the direction of the constellation of Virgo that the center of the universe is located, according to modern science. And but then you might say there are several other levels of it, and so not only is it human beings or animals that are created in like a tree of life, but our planet is as well. And in this case, you might say that it's actually like the polar axis, which, you know, it's not a physical axis. It's just the axis that we can observe that the Earth rotates around.
Mm-hmm.
But that is sort of our local tree of life.
Mm-hmm.
And that organizes in the same way, as I said, we human beings are organized in four directions, the front, the back, the left, and the right. Mm-hmm. In the same way, the planet around this its polar axis is organized in a western hemisphere, in an eastern hemisphere, in a front side, and a back side. Mm-hmm. That's what our minds is in resonance with. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's sort of a level that organizes human beings to not completely do their own thing, but all this to, you know, because we have this resonance with the Earth and the four directions of the Earth that I just described, we are reasonably well within the cosmic plan. So this is a background. Now, if you are to say that there is a front side and a back side and the left and the right, then and the same applies to the Earth. Well, then there is a Western Hemisphere and an Eastern Hemisphere. And the Western Hemisphere corresponds to our left brain half, and the Eastern Hemisphere to our right brain half. Mm-hmm. Because these are, they're typically related in the kind of mentalities that are there. And then there is a line that separates the West and the East. On a global, if you look upon the planet as a global brain, and that particular line, it goes from the North Pole to the South Pole, but it goes on the geographical side. It goes basically through Copenhagen, Berlin, Rome, and down to Cape Town.
So they're the corpus callosum in the global brain, are they?
Well, there is a connection there, so to speak. You can probably find it. But the point that I'm coming to here is that what is also on this line is basically the line goes through the border between Tunisia and Libya, and which are two countries that are very strongly affected about of the incoming energies at this particular point in time. Mm-hmm. And when we came to something called the beginning of the seventh day of the eighth wave, and this becomes very technical for somebody who has not studied the background, of course, I welcome anyone to go to my webpage, kalleman.com, or to read my books to get this background. But just because I'm not providing the background here, I still want to sort of talk about what the results were.
I just want to say this to people listening, too. If you want to try to catch up a little more quickly than finding the book and all that, you've got some wonderful articles that have a pretty good synopsis of some of this so that it makes sense as far as bringing into the Middle East or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, in November, early November of last year, the prediction was that there would be some kind of a collapse of the polarity that has existed for 5,000 years between the Western and the Eastern hemispheres of our planet. And this is what we're seeing now, and so it's not an accident that this the intensity of the changes that are now happening is in North Africa, and that there is it all started in Tunisia, and now it's intense in Tripoli in Libya, which are located on this particular line where the previous polarities of the mind are collapsing. And it has consequences. These waves, they have tended to organize human beings in different kinds of social structures. And as we know, when we go back far in time, people were organized in families and tribes and so forth. But it was about 5,000 years ago, when a calendar called the Long Count started among the Maya, which was a wave of 13 periods, each of 400 years. When that started, people started to become organized in nations. And that was a huge paradigm shift, you might say. And it happens initially in Egypt and in Iraq, which are also, you know, very evidently part of the changes and movements that are happening in the world today. That's where the world's first nations arose. And that's where they have existed the longest time. But that particular structure was expected to start to disintegrate, you might say, when the seventh day began in November. And when I say this, you know, it happened 3rd of November 2010. What I'm referring to is then when it happens in the cosmos, so to speak, when the actual shift takes place on a cosmic energetic level. And then it always takes a little time before these energies and these waves will actually manifest, because we human beings are pretty inert, and we don't want to change if we don't have to, basically.
Well, that's true, yeah.
That is true. Amazingly true. That's how we've been. And what's also so amazing is that we tend to think that the world will always be like it is this moment, more or less.
Right.
Yeah, unless there's something really dramatic going on. And in a sense, you might say that's what's happening now. But anyway, what I believe is starting to happen is sort of a disintegration of the national structures of a big part of the world, the Arabic Muslim world. And this is predictable. It's really what we should have expected, I think. But it's also that there is a polarity, and to some extent that has been expressed in a lot of hostility between the East and the West, and which is now starting to disintegrate.
Hmm.
And the sharp lines that have existed before will no longer exist.
And also that must mean that in people's identities, there has to be a lot of that shifting going on as well, eh?
Yeah, yes. And, you know, I think where we're going, and now I'm talking a little bit into the future, after the completion of the Maya, after the culmination of the Mayan calendar, what some people call the end of the Mayan calendar, where we're going there is a dissolution of identities also.
Hmm.
That's a broader change. But, you know, to a large extent, what has created much separation between human beings have been how we've held on to these particular identities, like I am a scientist, I am Swedish, I live in Seattle, mm-hmm. and so forth. These are a few of my identities.
I'm a Muslim, I'm a Christian, I'm a Jew.
Yeah. Right. Now, I think we're going into a God space with a ninth wave that is coming, where it will be silly to hold on to these things. It will come a natural change for those that are aligning, that are sort of choosing to align, to be in resonance with this incoming wave, where they're, you know, I'm sure we'll keep the identities. It will not just be everyone looking like everybody else, but the charge on them, I think, will be starting to loosen up, and it will be more like a thing in passing, or something that we, you know, adds to the variety, rather than something that gives us a position from which we can separate ourselves from other people.
That's really interesting. So if we look at Gaddafi, he was in a position of dominance and power. And that's all just kind of sliding apart, isn't it?
It seems so. And so part of this whole predictions regarding the seventh day of the galactic underworld was that now that the polarity between East and West would start to dissolve, it would also mean that a 5,000-year period of dominance of the left brain half, or actually on the global scale, Western dominance, would start to be to disintegrate. And it's not only some specific kind of dominance that will start to disintegrate, I believe, but what will start is the very phenomenon of dominance itself that is starting to. And that's what's so amazing, that what we will see then is people that will try to position themselves and generate an identity of, I'm the dominating dog, or whatever you want to call it. I'm the top dog. I'm
the alpha.
I'm the alpha male, or alpha female, or whatever. These positionings will have no future.
Hmm.
And that's what's behind this whole, you might say, in a sense, it's a disintegration of dominance, and it's this disintegration of the dominance mediated through the nation state, and it's also a disintegration of dominance on different parts of the planet over other parts of the planet. That I believe that's what we're starting to witness here. So believe me, the change is very large. That's what I'm convinced of.
So I'll just keep going back to the Middle East, since it's pretty hot right now. Do you feel, I guess my question, and probably my fascination with rising consciousness for years has been, do you feel like enough of it's rising and enough of the people to make this dissolution, keep it being relatively peaceful as those that are dominant get de-dominating, or, you know?
Yeah. That's my suspicion is that this is a process with ups and downs. This is a process of moves forward and backlashes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think history is that linear, that now it's all rosy in Egypt or anywhere else. But I think
that's the scary part, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, in a sense. But also, though, I also believe that the direction is clear. It's just one direction, and that's the end to dominance. That's where it's all going, and that's what ultimately will come to be what our planet is, what is typical of our planet. It's just that I believe that the path there might have, the pendulum might swing a couple of times before we get to that state of no dominance.
Mm-hmm. So what about the military-industrial complex?
It's the same thing. Yeah. I mean, it's just, are you thinking of the one in the United States?
Yes, or I'm thinking it is global, but probably emanating first and foremost from here. But can we assume or can we believe that the rising consciousness or those waves of change are going to enter or be a part of their lives as well as everyone else's, you know, in the...
Well, it's somewhat similar. I don't believe that everyone who is in some kind of a position of power, whether it's Gaddafi or some powerful industrial leader of a military industry in the United States, they're not just rushing to get out of power, so to speak.
Oh, they're not. I guess we knew that, right?
Right. So, but what I believe is happening is that people everywhere are becoming sensitive to these incoming waves, and who knows? You know, there are, you know, what I might refer to as Gorbachev kind of people in the most different structures of power, so to speak. So, you know, occasionally there will be somebody like Gorbachev that sort of just does something quite contrary to what the structure was originally designed for and intended to. But I don't think that's necessarily the rule. More often, I think it's that people in general will sort of start to see things different and shift their perception because of this transformation of consciousness. And as that happens, once you start to see things the way they really are and what kind of effects they have on our planet in its totality, well, once you just see it quite clearly, that's just the beginning of something that ultimately is irreversible, I think. And we have not been doing that for a long time because there's been, it's only, we've sort of, you might say, we have been waiting for these higher waves of the cosmic pyramid, the eighth and the ninth wave, and they are the ones that are going to really shift our paradigms, to shift our perception of the world and so forth.
Do you feel that the economic situation, the dominances and so on that have entrenched themselves in that circumstance, in that network, is going to melt and concern itself with what, sharing and community?
Yeah, I think so. But maybe it won't be that voluntary, so to speak. More likely what will happen is that, you know, we already see here how the changes that are happening in the Muslim world, which then ultimately goes back to a wave in the Mayan calendar and can be explained by that, they are having as one of their many effects a quite dramatic, not unique, but quite dramatic rise in oil prices. And if this goes on to not only Libya, but countries like Algeria, Saudi Arabia, and other oil-rich countries in the region, which is quite likely, I would say, then the oil prices will soar. And the result will be, probably the first result will be some very debt-ridden European countries will just find themselves in a terribly difficult economic situation. Mm-hmm. And the same will then, I think, will affect also the United States and China and so forth. And this is, it's something I can't say that I'm looking forward to it, I mm-hmm. must say. Mm-hmm. But I also see that this is how it has to go, because this the way that the economy has been running for a long time would ultimately just kill the earth unless it somehow comes to a point. And from that, from what I believe will be a very difficult situation where maybe much of the economic structures are collapsing, from that point, we will have to see what can we do to create a sharing economy, mm-hmm. One that's really based on what is really necessary and what really based on seeing the needs of others as our own needs and so forth. So that's something I believe is absolutely on its way. That's part of the direction that the Mayan calendar helps point out to us. But again, you know, in both cases, whether we're talking about the political transformation or the economic transformation, I believe it won't be just a straight, rosy line. Mm-hmm. I do believe there will be moves forward and backward and difficulties. It's just that the direction is clear, and it is in no human being's power to reverse that direction towards a world of oneness, towards a world of sharing, towards a world of no dominance, you might say a return to the Garden of Eden, mm-hmm. but on a new level, so to speak.
So it's sort of like in paroxysms, or wasn't I reading in one of your articles that it would be 18 days of... There are many little sections, but there would be like 18 days of a rise in possibility and 18 days of a descent and reaction and 18 days like waves. Is that right?
Yes. That is the ninth wave that will have that particular rhythm. Mm-hmm. And that is, as you're saying, it's a wave movement, a wave movement of seven peaks and six valleys, energetically speaking.
And then it's all done?
Then it's all done. In other words, it's done on the level of the energy. But, you know, it's not like I believe that in a minute, at that minute, the world will be sort of done and ready, baked, and complete. Mm-hmm. No, what it means is that the energy field has been settled. And then how long does it take for us to adapt to it? Mm-hmm. How long does it take? Will take for human beings to be fully in resonance with this new field of unity consciousness? Mm-hmm. Well, I that is something I can. It's not something that the Mayan calendar can tell us anything about. I think that time will just get a completely different character at that point, mm-hmm. and so whether it's I have no idea. What I don't think it will happen over a night or something like that. I think it's completely misleading when some people are sort of talking about some date in the future when something will happen according to the Mayan calendar. That's a complete misunderstanding of what it's about, because it's all about processes, not mm-hmm. about singular dates like that.
So I'm going to interrupt just for a moment to re-identify you for people that have tuned in a bit later. We're listening to Carl Kalaman, who's an expert on the Mayan calendar, and we're going to ask him more questions about the build-up and the use of the new consciousnesses coming through between now and 2012, which is kind of minutes away, isn't it? So,
yeah.
And you can check his website, is it carlkalaman.com?
No, it's just Kalaman.com.
Kalaman. He's got some wonderful articles. I recommend his books as well, but for a catch-up and the way time's speeding up, you might want to check his website articles. Okay, so now what we're talking about, I'm saying to you, I was hoping that by 2012 we would all be enlightened, but I think you're saying that's not going to happen.
Well, I don't know. But my suspicion is that there will take a time for people to absorb these new energies and to adapt, to be in resonance fully with this new field, so to speak.
And because we could be hanging on to our identity as it was in our security and all that for a while too, couldn't we?
Yeah, probably. I cannot tell. Except for what I keep saying, so to speak, that the direction has been set.
Mm-hmm.
The way the field will look on a cosmic level is determined already, and we have no power of it over this. It's for us to adapt to it, to be in resonance with it, mm-hmm. to aim to fulfill the cosmic plan or the divine plan. And there's no other way, so to speak, that has any future. That's what I'm saying.
So how can we prepare people who people are always asking about this, and not everyone. So how can we prepare people's till the soil of people's consciousness, or help people prepare for the possibilities that exist? Because the possibilities are quite exciting, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. I think so, mm-hmm. and when I look at the what I think is the intended end result of this whole thing, it's a world that is much more beautiful than what it is today, and it's a world in harmony and many of the what is troubling us and troubling the world, many of those phenomena, I believe, will disappear. Now, how do we prepare ourselves? Well, you might say there are different aspects to it. There is a collective aspect to it, and there is a individual aspect to it. I think the two should go together, both are needed, you might say.
Mm-hmm.
I think we will have to see ourselves as part of a collective process towards unity consciousness. One thing about it is is to follow the waves of the Mayan calendar. This is something you might do individually, or you might do it as a collective. And part of that is, I do have an article that you saw there on my website, the Mayan calendar and the 9+9 wave, I think,
mm-hmm.
and or count. That's why. And then I have another article that has the dawn of on the ninth wave. And these are calendar. These are daily counts that we may follow in order to attune ourselves, align ourselves with the waves of with the incoming wave of unity consciousness. That's a good thing as a help, so to speak, because it provides some kind of a time-wise framework within which this transformation will occur.
I was fascinated by one of your articles talking about the Mayan calendars were not always the same, but the people responded to that resonance, to the resonance of the shifting consciousness. I thought that was wonderful. So that's part of their paradigm, was to hold that resonance or to experience that.
Yeah, I think that's something maybe not everyone knows about. I think what most people have heard is this end date that is usually given, December 21, 2012. Which I think has no meaning whatsoever.
That sounds clear.
Yeah, oh, it's very clear. I'm very clear about that. But that's now still, it's sort of, it comes from a long wave, as we call, or a long count that the Maya would be following about 1,500 years ago. But they haven't followed that particular calendar for a very long time.
Hmm.
And so it's not really possible today to go down and ask the Mayan elders about this particular calendar, because they haven't been using it for a long time.
Hmm.
They may have a few, they have some prophecies, they have some unique calendars that are still in use among them. But much has changed. It's not the same exactly as you're saying. And I believe that these changes that the Mayan calendar has undergone is a reflection of their sensitivity to the actual frequency dominating their minds have been at hand. The calendar of the Maya is really about, it provides us an opportunity to be sensitive to the paradigm shifts in the world.
Hmm.
If you want to be sensitive to such shifts, shifts in perception of reality, then you will have to be in resonance with or in tune with the particular wave that most evidently creates these paradigm shifts. And so you need a calendar that describes these paradigm shifts. And so that's why it's not something that was always there, the Mayan calendar, it's always been the same. No, absolutely not. Any scholar on this matter knows that it's undergone many, many changes over the years, and many of the calendars that once was used by this particular people are no longer in existence, and played a role in a certain time when people really felt that this is really what creates our life here now. But that may not be the same at the current time.
So when we're following on that kind of logic or that resonant logic, and you're right about looking at the calendar and getting some comprehension of what's really trying to go on, but I'm thinking about the Middle East as well, and I'm going, I think a lot of us are, and I'm going, I guess if we could resonate with that shifting consciousness through thousands of people or even a million people at a time who are trying to move to more of a group consciousness or a oneness, yeah, or that would help too, wouldn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And so one of the things that I'm involved in as part of the Ninth Wave is something called the Jerusalem Hug. It's something you will find that website if you look, ask, and you should find, or as they say, it's on the internet, Jerusalem Hug.
As in H-U-G?
Yes, yeah. H-U-G.
Oh, okay.
And it's really exactly about what you're asking for here. It's not the first time that this is happening. The first time was an event that took place on the, if I want to be technical, it was at the midpoint of the fifth day of the galactic underworld in the Mayan calendar. So it has an origin in these events that we have been organizing to celebrate significant shift points. And what it was at that point in time was 2,000 people, I think, originally, that were gathering, forming a large circle, you might call a hug, but a large circle of people encircling the old city of Jerusalem. And with song, and what it's come to be repeated a couple of times with artistry of different kinds. And the idea, you know, Jerusalem is like the Berlin of the religions. The previous Berlin with a division line, so to speak, between the political East and the West, the way it was until 1989. Mm-hmm. Now, we still have these division lines between religions in Jerusalem. And the idea is not to try to sort of change the people that are very carefully guarding their own turfs in the old city of Jerusalem, but just for the people to express the love for this old city, which is the, you might say, it's the holy city for all Christians, all Muslims, all Jews, and also for all Baha'i, which is a smaller but nonetheless another group that holds this as a sacred city. And to sort of melt the, in my view anyway, melt the division lines, not by changing anyone, but through the love, so to speak. What will happen now, and I'm talking about some event that we will be coordinating globally, it could be either, it's not set yet, it's either at the very end of May or it will be at the end of June. I hope it will be already at the end of May. Is that around this Jerusalem hug that will happen then, we will organize larger circles like we did last year in the Conscious Convergence, which was an event based on the Mayan calendar, 17th, 18th of July last year. to create like a huge global medicine wheel, and where the people then are able to actually hold hands. I don't think that's necessarily possible, but we did this last year for the first time. It was an event that created like a global medicine wheel, creating a sacred space of the planet with its four directions, you might say, with amazing participation of Bushmen, of Sami, of Mayan elders, of the people, Chinese and Hindus in Bali and Singapore. We all together created a circle around the planet. And now what will happen then with a Jerusalem hug is that these people that will gather, and I'm sure there will be many people coming this time around, they will be backed up by larger circles around the world and expressing the same thing, that there is this desire for peace in Jerusalem, because it's such an important microcosm of our planet, in a sense, because it is a place where the division lines go between different religions that are not always able to coexist there. And so this is sort of what a way of what you're asking for, you know, participation like millions in the processes that we now see in the Middle East. And it's one where we're not saying that we are Muslims, we're not saying that we're Christians, we're not saying that we're Jews, we are just human, but we may still be, you know, or I should say, put it in other terms a little bit, that we do not let these identities separate us.
Wonderful.
You know, we will still keep our beliefs, I guess, or at least it's not for anybody else to change them. But
I love that, and people will feel the oneness, won't they?
They will, absolutely, absolutely. And I think, you know, because it's Jerusalem and it's related to big religions, I think it's something that could really become mainstream. It doesn't take a lot. All you have to do is to, you know, want to be participate in a big hug and that you also want this, because that must be at the start of all of these processes that we may do to adapt to the ninth wave, is to have this intention of unity consciousness. We need to want that. That's where it all starts. And that's, I think, you know, if I'm to leave the listener with something, it is that to for that person to ask herself or himself, he or she hold this intention of manifesting unity consciousness, of wanting to be part of a transformation of unity consciousness? And that's where it all starts, with such an intention. And I'm sure now, I did not in this interview have time to talk about some of the what I believe may be individual paths to transform into this kind of unity consciousness. But everything starts with an intention. And if the intention is there, I would think the individual will also be able to find the means to manifest it.
Means rises into the individual because of the reception to these shifting frequencies.
Yes, exactly.
I want to throw in one question, which we don't have enough time for, but I'm still going to throw it in.
Okay.
And maybe you'll come back and finish some of this with us. Would you do that one day?
Yes.
Okay, because I was thinking about sustainability, oil, and what you were saying and so on, and the shifting collective global economics. I'm going, do you see that with our consciousness shift, we can make some of those changes more rapidly and gracefully than we used to think?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, when you start to study the Mayan calendar, you find that all human creativity And that applies also to the kind of energy sources that we may be using, because ultimately they also came from some kind of a human creativity. All human creativity depends on what frame of mind that dominate us.
Mm-hmm.
And these frames of minds, they ultimately come from the resonance with the tree of life and the waves that this is emitting to, for us to change consciousness, to change paradigms and so forth. So what will happen, I believe, is that our perception of reality will change as consciousness is transformed. And when that perception really clearly lands in us, then we will just see. You know, it's almost like when I was talking earlier about the military industrial complex and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
When the shift takes place in our perception, then the direction is already clear. And the same thing, I'm convinced, will happen here too. The solutions are out there, but we are still in such a fragmented mindset that we are not willing to go for the solutions. We are not enough committed to the survival of the planet and to the fulfillment of the cosmic plan in unity consciousness, that we take the steps that are necessary.
But it is possible.
It is absolutely possible. I'm sure. It's a matter, again, it's a matter of intention and priority, and but it will have to embrace then also, of course, by large sections of society and the powerful sections of society. It's ultimately, it all comes back to how you see things. And that's not in our control. It comes from the cosmos, according to the paradigm shifts that the Mayan calendar describes.
Wow, this has been really inspiring. And I have tons more questions, but we're out of time.
Yeah.
I sure hope you'll come back again and
thank you.
Join us. This is Dr. Kalaman. Look up kalaman.com. That's kalaman.com. And will you be speaking anywhere soon that we could tune in?
No. Yes, there is one thing that is settled, so to speak, and that is the so-called cruise into 2012. So I will be enjoying a cruise between March 5th and 12th, starting in Long Beach in Los Angeles, and it will visit Cabo San Lucas, Mazatlan, and Puerto Vallarta. And so we will have a ceremony there on March 9th, which is the starting point of the ninth wave.
Wonderful.
And, there will be a bunch of very interesting speakers and lecturers on this cruise. And so that's something I certainly want to invite anybody who wants to broaden their perspectives. And what I hope is also, you know, the discussion about, you know, how are we going to relate to these changes, and what can we do to strengthen them and to align with them and so forth. That's nobody's sitting with the answers to these things. The people that have shared intention, we should get together and we should craft these things and exchange ways and exchange possibilities that are fitted to our unique natures and so forth. And so hopefully that this cruise will allow for these kind of discussions.
Great. Well, it sounds like a wonderful cruise, and I've sure been inspired by our conversation today, Dr. Kalaman. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Have a wonderful cruise.
Yeah, thank you.
Right.
It'll be fun, I think.
I think it will, too. You'll be just flying high. You can lead the way.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So this is Veronica Entwistle saying, well, that was a real multifaceted discussion. I'm very excited. The whole 2012 thing has got me thinking a lot about how much we can, I guess, surf, ride the wave, make the shift.
Yeah.
And I think you've really helped a lot with that.
Good. Yeah.
So thank you, everyone, and thank you so much, Dr. Kellerman.
Thank you.